All right, welcome back. We'll reconvene council. We were expecting BNZ at 1:30. Nick's been in contact and they're coming around 2-ish, so we just need to keep moving. And my apologies, Ella, we've flogged her lunch, so she's grabbed some lunch back with her into the chamber. But all right, so we are on to item 6, elected members' expenses, reimbursements and allowance policy. Mr. Donnelly.
So I've outlined a paper here on our current policy on councillor expenses, reimbursements and allowances. Also had attached to that the current policy, which is on page 76 and 77. And on page 74 and 75 is an excerpt out of the Remuneration Authority, their councillor base role description, which I'd referenced earlier in the paper, just around the councillor, around council business versus constituency work. And I note in the paper that the key issue, I think the actual amounts that we're paying, I haven't really heard too many issues with those. The real question comes up around exactly which meetings qualify as council business. As I pointed out there, when I apply this, I use the appointments that are made at the start of the triennium and any other appointments that are made from time to time. I did make the comment that if that's not working, then perhaps council could sort of have a mechanism to add other meetings, and did suggest that potentially when the communications committee, which has a list of the meetings, it could be raised there if there was any additional meetings. But apart from that, I'd recommend that the policy is discussed and if need be amended and approved from there.
Thank you, Mr. Donnelly. So this is a process we've been talking about for a while, and we do have an existing policy, and there was a need for clarity around what is council business and what is constituency business from an expenses perspective, and we've had a number of discussions, and that's resulted in this paper coming forward. Open it up for discussion. Councillor Lawford.
So, having been new to this, so I'm just trying to get my head around it, but having spent the last 2 months doing a considerable amount of travel around my constituency, there was a really positive response from a lot of community groups that I was there and I was interested, and given the size of Dunstan, I guess it would be really good to be able to be quite clear about what is constituency versus council representation. So a good example is the likes of the Wakatipu Wilding Conifers Group, who have invited me along to each of their meetings that I've been running and have asked that I continue to go to those. So, it's a drive from Wanaka to Queenstown, so it's an hour's drive, but I may end up going anyway even if I wasn't reimbursed, but it would be nice to know where the line is drawn and whether or not if there's a particular issue. So I guess I'd contact you, Nick, and say, look, they've specifically invited me along around the specific issue. Is that something that I can get reimbursed for? Is that how it would work?
And perhaps I'll give some context around, we'll use the Wakatipu Wilding as an example. We do have a number of appointments, and I'll pass them on to you that council representatives. I'll give the example that Councillor Noon is on the Animal Ethics Committee, Councillor Brown's on the Kakanui Water Allocation Committee. Is that?
No, Waitaki. I'm in the Waitaki
one. Oh, you're in the Waitaki one. Sorry. Yep. But so their council appointments, in the Wakatipu Wild and Conifers Group's case, we've got a staff member that represents council.
Central Otago
Conifer
Group.
Right. And don't you have someone who's dedicated to the Waka Tipu group?
Yeah, through the MPI money, so liaising with Doc.
Yes.
Same person, but officially on the Central Otago Conifer
community group. So there's no council appointee as such from a governance perspective. So, Mr. Donnelly, am I correct in saying that would be constituency work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I would view it. Yes.
So who decides whether or not there's an official governance representation, or who decides on whether there isn't?
A council.
Through a process around the table, or through
through the chair? If the Conifer Group, the Waka Tipu Conifer Group, wanted to request formally through the council to have a representative to either come along to speak annually or 6 monthly or whatever, it would come through
either the chief executive or the chair, yes. And it would turn up on in a paper, and council would discuss it and a decision would be made.
It's not a satisfactory situation, Ella, because
it's an opportunity to miss out on really good
not.
Community
it's,
work.
And Graham and I and you would think the same way. I don't think the council quite gets the vastness of Dunstan and huge distances we're travelling to meet various groups. And it's not possible. If we were living in Dunedin, we could get a constituent to meet us in town or go, and yeah. It wouldn't be nowhere. For us, it's 100 kilometres to go and meet that constituent or that representative groups, yep. Sometimes further. And I don't think it's... I still think that Dunstan needs to be a special case here. I don't know the situation in Clutha. I'm not aware of that. You'd be better informed than me, Stephen, Karma.
I think the all three rural constituencies are the same.
Yeah.
And the distances would be very similar. Councillor Brown's got massive areas. For me to get to Councillor Hope's patch is an hour and a half
So this is why we raised it here.
Yep.
Yep.
And really there's no change here, which is what's disappointing about it. And I don't think it should require a formal resolution of council to, and this is where I come back to you, Stephen, as chairman. If Ella is being asked to be a representative of the ORC in her capacity as an Otago Regional Councillor, and let's just say that. Something like that, maybe quarterly or something like that.
Yep.
She should be able to come to you, and you should be able to say that's fine by me. I don't see it as something that we need to decide on as a policy issue.
I disagree with that, and we need to understand whether it's an operational matter or a governance matter. And if there's to be some representation of ORC, then who should it be, whether it's a local matter or, you know, there's a whole range of things come into it.
So who decides when and where you go when you're asked to attend something by a community group?
It's a different case.
Yeah, Mr. Bodecker and I, sometimes I'll get a request the request is actually for some technical detail, and I'll pass it on to Mr. Bodecker. It might be either himself or a director that goes. At other times, there is a governance role, and so I would either fill a position or find another councillor to attend. And yeah, there have been examples over the years where a request's been made, you attend once, and actually this is operational, Mr. Bodecker. And you look after it, or your team looks after it from there on. So we handle it on that basis.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're getting ourselves into a potential or actual mismatch of policy against reality. The annual plan discussion this morning was a clear indication that we have broader horizons than we used to have. We've got greater commitments, particularly over areas of greater distance. We're making much bigger investments of all sorts in Dunstan in particular, and I'm sure there'll be more to come. As Ella said earlier, Wanaka Public Transport is something we'll need to start thinking about reasonably soon, along with QLDC. Now, it seems to me that we should therefore be seriously thinking about enabling our three councillors in that constituency to match the kind of position we've taken as a council, with the posture we've taken as a council of being more active, more heavily investing. I would hope that Councillor Lawton could go to the Queenstown Wilding Group meetings if they ask her to be there and be reimbursed for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And if she needs to go to QLDC meetings to talk about issues related to their partnership with us in terms of issues like public transport and whatever else, I would hope she'd be reimbursed for that too. And that we would have, Nick would have a budget which would enable that to happen.
Councillor Scott, then.
Yeah, I mean, just building on what's been said before, you know, I think the CE and the Chair should have the discretion to be able to say to our Director of Finance that, hey, we want our councillors to go to a particular meeting, can that, on behalf of the council, and that will be council business, and they'll be reimbursed. So I don't think personally it needs to come as a paper to the, you know, to the council table, that you have that discretion, mm-hmm. and you're able to manage it as you see fit. After saying all of it, you know, questions in my mind is it actually good practice to have a councillor as a member? I'm going to get shot down for this, but, you know, is it actually good practice to have a councillor as a member of the Wilding Pines group? You know, and in fact, you know, we've had previous situations where the councillor then turns up as the advocate for that group. You know, it's all about this blooming group as opposed to some objectivity and representing council's interests. They actually become a de facto representative of this group as opposed to the council. And so I think that you know, that's then becomes something that the CE and the Chair can chew over and say, look, we're quite happy, you're representing the council, but, you know, we're not expecting you to be a member of the group, but we understand that it makes good practice you go twice a year, and you'll be there on behalf of the council. You as the Chair may go to one of them as well, you know, boom, boom, boom. So it's sort of managed like that. But, I mean, I'd hate to see a situation where, you know, all of a sudden all the councils are now a member of all these groups, and that's council business, and they all turn up and fight each other, whereas actually we're here to be strategic and to distance ourselves and to make some long-term decisions, not to be local advocates.
Councillor Kenton?
Yeah, look, just on that, being invited to go to a meeting doesn't make you a member.
No.
Right. I think that's quite important. So the status of your attendance is what it is.
Yes.
I have some sympathy for a rural electorate councillor compared with a Dunedin ward. A rural ward councillor compared with the Dunedin ward councillor. Certainly in Dunedin, I decide what I go to and what I don't go to, be that on my head. And I'm sure that other city councillors, constituency councillors are doing the same thing. And we know that it's only 5k across the city or whatever it is, so it's not a biggie.
Hang on.
I would like us to consider... Oh, sorry, except for those who live in strange places in the city.
It's still the same city, Kate, isn't it?
But in any way, I wonder whether there is a way of being able to justify a modest allowance, standard annual allowance for a rural councillor over a city councillor. So that it probably won't cover every mile you ever do, but there is at least recognition and might at least fill the petrol tank. And I don't know how much that would be, and whether or not that is possible to do that within the constraints of our current remuneration arrangements, or, for instance, whether it means slicing a little off a city constituency person and giving a, you know, putting it together and off loading, you know, unloading one and loading the other a little bit. Now, I don't know if that's possible, but it seems to me that that takes away the issue of, not the issue, but the prospect of going to absolutely everything, because I'm going to get paid mileage to do it, if that was ever in anyone's mind. And we just simply say, well, here you go, you are going to be choosing what you're going to be doing, and here's a modest allowance to that. I'm not sure if the framework allows us to think about that, but maybe that's something that we could just mull over and see if there is an opportunity in there. That seems to me about as far as you could go under the current rules. Whether you could do that or not, I don't know.
So you're actually talking about taking some of the salary and putting it into a pot?
Well, I mean, that might be one way of doing it. There might be other ways in which we can massage that around. I mean, Mr. Donnelly, I mean, read the rules and see where that comes.
Yeah.
There's anything there.
No. Yeah, I'll just come back to Mr. Donnelly. Yeah, respond to that.
Well, the current way it works is the Remuneration Authority sets the base councillor rate,
yep,
and then there's payments for additional responsibility,
yes,
so additional duties, if you like, which typically that's based around membership of committees or being the chair of a committee, or if there was other, you know, we haven't gone any further than chairs, but I believe some other councils don't necessarily have chairs, they have portfolios and different things. If you were to say that there was an additional payment for additional work within representing within your constituency, I'd sort of go back to that base councillor role. I'm not saying that I wouldn't want to preempt what the Remuneration Authority might say, but I would imagine they'd probably view what you're saying as already being covered within the role. But the difficulty is what you're saying is the amount that's involved in that, the amount of time and cost is different for depending on where you live.
That's
so they
right.
haven't really taken account of that.
Exactly.
But I don't know how they would deal with that.
I would like if it was possible for us to make the inquiry and say, you know, you've got some councillors that might do 50 kilometres in a year on constituency business, maybe a bit more than that, and there are others who do 3,000 or 2,000 or whatever the numbers are. We know that some of that is already being recompensed under this policy, but there might be, I don't know, 1,000 left over or something, who knows. But just simply to make an inquiry to say, how do you think we should handle that? Do you think we can? And see what comes back.
All right, Councillor Lawson.
I just want to endorse what Councillor Trevor said, but there is a precedent, Nick, and the precedent is Parliament. I can tell you that when I was serving in Parliament, and also it's still there today, for decades, Parliament has had a rural allowance paid to rural electorates. So, for example, Clutha the Southland gets a completely different expenses allowance, recognising his travel difficulties, than the MP for Dunedin North. And that's recognised not in his salary, which would be the wrong thing to touch because the salary will stay here, but it's recognised in the expenses allowance that's provided to that particular Member of Parliament. And the one who actually gets the most, interestingly, is the member for Southern Māori, because it encompasses all of South Island, half the North. I'm very keen on looking at it that way, that the idea of introducing into our council, because we are a bit of a special case, a rural travel allowance that recognises that for the six councillors who are in rural areas, there is the potential to recognise the greater distances they will cover through constituency through a rural travel expense policy. Now, you've already got in our policy currently you've already broken down into different areas that you can claim expenses on. There's IT and things like that. So it picks up on what Trevor's just said. Then you recognise the additional work or the additional travel that's done by the rural members, and then you've got that separate section in there. Don't need to touch the salary. I'd like to think we're all going to be paid the same. What do you think about that?
And that would need approved by the
Remuneration
Authority.
Oh yeah, would do, because that would go into the expense policy,
right,
as an allowance, and then they would need to approve that.
Yeah.
The Remuneration Authority's guidelines, as we've got them here in front of us, talking about the base role of a councillor, includes bringing the views of the community into council decision-making processes. Now, how's Councillor Lawton or Councillor Laws or how they're going to do that without being at those communities. Second point, being an advocate for community groups and individuals at council meetings. Remuneration Authority says that's part of the base role of a councillor. The same principle applies. How can they do that without actually going to those community groups and individuals? And I would hope that they would, by some process such as councillor laws are suggested, able to do that without putting their personal wallet on the table.
What that's actually saying is that's part of the base salary.
Yeah. Well, but how do they achieve that without having some allowance to do the travel to achieve it? I'm on the same base salary as they are. I have never made an expenses claim any time in this council. Never needed to.
So you don't say that it's contingent constituency work. You say they need a quantum sum for the work where they're representing the council.
Yeah, well, you see, there's a fine line. Last two words.
Because it's either constituency work or it's not. It's constituents, you know, if it's not, if it's council work, well, then there is a mechanism to be reimbursed. So what I'm hearing you saying is you want a recognition of being recompensed for doing constituency work. That's what that allowance or whatever you call it would do.
Yes.
But it simply represents a differential cost of somebody in a big ward or somebody in a small ward.
Doing constituency work.
Exactly.
Correct. Yeah, I understand. But we've got to remember what it's for. It's for constituency work, official work, which has already got a mechanism.
Yes. Councillor Brown?
I'm really frustrated about this. I called a meeting a couple of weeks ago and see where we get to. And the thing that bugs me about this is that the Remuneration Authority have never really considered that there are differences. I find that incredible, really.
Yeah.
You know, because there's real inequity in this.
Yeah. Mm.
And somehow we need to get the message across them that they need to come up with a policy to deal with this.
Yeah.
I think for me, or for all the rural people, it's probably just mileage we're talking about, because in Dunedin, you don't travel far, but you probably do still spend a lot of time in, you know, constituency work. So, I don't know. And there are grey areas in this too. We've just got to be careful we're not seen as representing council's view on life all the time. We've got to be careful. But I don't know. It bugs me that the Remuneration Authority haven't been able to come up with something that would take these...
It's a sticky one right around the country. It's an issue.
Yeah.
And we've had deputations in the past on behalf of regional councils.
Is that right?
Yeah, I lead one. They're a rather tough team to deal with. Councillor Lawson?
So I was wondering if that was going to be wrapped up, because I've got a couple of other points just that I want to bring up, but I'll finish on the other point first if you've got something to say, Michael.
I was just going to frame the motion.
Okay. All right.
Well, hang on, I've got Councillor Neil first. So have you got a comment to make or not?
Got comments to make on other points, so if we wanted to finish with that point first before I bring up other points.
Righto. Councillor Neil?
It concerns me, Mr. Chairman, that when you go into these offices, regardless of whether you're a city representative or a rural representative, you know that, okay, the route you get paid, but you know also it's going to cost you. And if you go back in history, there was in fact no pay at all. And I would also subscribe to the theory that we actually got better governance when people didn't get paid than we've got now, when they do get paid, but that's my personal opinion. So I think councils need to be aware that it's not a junket, it's going to cost you. And whilst, I just leave it at
that. That's a lot.
I'll refute a bit of that. I think what that means is that the people that can stand to be elected are a very specific group, because you have to have had some sort of financial backing to be there in the first place. And I think what that does is limit our opportunity for representation.
Yeah, old white-skinned men.
Can I frame a motion then, Stephen? that the ARC approached the Remuneration Authority with regard to adding a rural travel allowance to the ARC's expenses policy.
You need to be a little more specific, would be my suggestion.
Well, I could, but I guess that's just
rural travel allowance
for the purpose of
constituency work.
Just put the constituency work.
Add, in, I think you're happy to add the four constituency work in? That was my point. Second, open it for discussion. Councillor Noon.
Hey, look, I'm supportive of this. I don't think anyone should be disadvantaged. At the end of the day, we've all got a role to represent our constituents, and we go about that in a personal manner that, you know, is demanded upon us by, and we, the constituents vary from area to area, and it may be turning up to meetings in Queenstown or, I don't know, going to a barbecue in Aramoana, for example. So, yeah, it just depends. So, supportive of it, and as I say, no member of this council should be disadvantaged in the representation role.
All right, so can we also, the other recommendation I think we probably need to move is, because we haven't made a lot of progress, is that the report's received, and then pick up the second recommendation. Are you happy to move both?
Sure.
Yep. And there was a seconder, wasn't there?
Yeah,
Michael. Yes, Mike. Councillor Deeker. Right, discussion.
Can I also just...
Can we hear the recommendation?
That ORC approached the Remuneration Authority with regard to adding a rural travel allowance for the purpose of constituency work to the ORC expenses policy.
Everybody clear? Mm-hmm. The mover and seconder are comfortable. Discussion. Councillor Brown.
Mr. Chairman, just one suggestion. I wonder whether the claim form should be drawn up so people can put down the reasons they went to a meeting, because it just says where you went to.
Yeah.
It somehow needs to be a bit more room to
lines. A reason from vehicle mileage.
Yeah.
I'll need to be a bit more elaborate if this gets passed.
Okay.
We can have a look at that. That's just an ORC form.
Yeah.
All right. Councillor Lawton?
Yep, quickly checking that reimbursement of other costs, talking of vehicle mileage, if I took the bus from Wanaka to Dunedin, because actually that I can reimburse for that, as opposed to car travel.
Cheaper.
It doesn't look anywhere on it. It's $50 as opposed to probably a lot more to take my own car.
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Hadn't considered that, but yeah, I think that would like...
Why not? The bus is great. It's still other work.
But he's got his own vehicle, so he hasn't considered it.
But I've got my own vehicle too, right?
What about a plane? What about the plane?
No plane.
I don't have a light plane, so I'm not going to ask that question.
No, it's just, you know, like if you're in...
No, Queenstown.
Queenstown, or I mean, there must be planes from Wanaka to Dunedin.
Yeah.
No.
No, Brian.
Not unless you've got your own.
You can sleep on the mailbags.
Anyway, and the other question, which I did bring up with you, Stephen, and whether or not it's actually referred to somewhere else, but professional development costs for elected members, and whether or not there's a set amount per year that you could look to, or whether it's just on a case-by-case basis. So, or for example, to attend the LGNZ conference, and
that's all dealt with. That's because you're there as a council representative.
Sure.
But
so,
but we don't have a set pot for
that. LGNZ workshops and things like that you might want to go and do Finance 101 or whatever it is.
Yep. So, but that is something as part of our strategic plan and wider discussions. We've done a self-assessment on the skills around the table, and we haven't gone the next stage and followed that up and looked for those opportunities. There is occasionally those opportunities that turn up, and they'd normally be, well, they always have been in the past, the council, when we've discussed it and agreed, and it's a council expense. But it's not something we've put a lot of focus on, and it's something we need to keep an eye on, opportunities. And we have discussed, Mr. Buddy. Mm. Yeah. All right, no further discussion on the two recommendations. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. All right, on to item 7, Cozy Homes Trust proposal. Mr. Bodeker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The paper is self-explanatory, but for new councillors, we have historically collected a targeted rate from Air Zone 1 and Milton. Milton was left out of Air Zone 1, so that's why they were separate. And it, we assisted homeowners in exchanging inefficient burners for better ones. We did communication work. We had expos and so on. We've been approached by the Cozy Homes Trust. Mr. McLean is a trustee of that group alongside Mayor Cull, who chairs it, and they've got a facilitator who works on a part-time basis. Their proposal is essentially to pick up the work we did and do some additional work in conjunction with the city. I understand that Clutha District Council have given them some grant money of, I think, 37...
Yeah, roughly.
Something like that. And they're asking us to use the Clean Air Reserve, which is designated for this type of work, to be available to do the subsidy of the burners. And you'll see there on three quarters of the way down the second page, $1,500 if you've got a community service card, and $1,200 otherwise is our scheduled contribution. So we're recommending that we partner with the Cozy Homes Trust and allow them to continue that good work.
And our funding would be used for clean heat appliances.
Correct. They do want us to fund the insulation, and I have said to the Mayor that's not what the money was collected for. We would have to have a separate resolution to change that, is my understanding, and may have to consult. But certainly I think that would be a good start. But there is a desire for us to use that money for the insulation as well.
Councillor Scott.
I think this is a good idea. So we're talking potentially up to 75 grand, is that what we're saying?
If it's 50 by 1500.
Yeah. Look, air quality is an area we just need to keep making incremental improvements on, and Milton's an issue. They're still using coal in Milton, yeah?
Mm.
But
still using coal in Otago.
I mean, you can buy coal
in
Mitre 10.
In particular, due to its proximity to Kai. But anyway, it's a good idea. I'm happy to move it.
You can buy it in Mitre 10. Buy Kai coal in Mitre 10.
The car trailers all go past my place and they don't all go to Milton full of coal. I can promise you that.
Right.
Councillor Lawson.
Perhaps a question maybe for Scott in terms of the conversations by the clean heat crew. There is significant impact potentially for a household converting from a wood burner to a heat pump. Yes, it could be easier for particularly maybe disadvantaged people or elderly than having to put in a wood fire where they then have to continually soak it, but the costs for electricity on that household long term will be, and likely to be, significantly more than a wood burner. Is that conversation had with the households? Is the budget drawn up so that they fully understand the implications? Do they get to choose between a wood burner or a heat pump? Because I would be really concerned if we're, you know, requiring houses to go to a heat pump when that cost is going to be a lot more going forward, particularly if they've got community support where, you know, Rotary might drop them off a trailer load of wood at the beginning of the winter and that kind of thing for those that can't be provided.
Through the chair here, so it focuses on clean solid fuel burners, certainly our contribution does, but the project manager for Cozy Homes Trust spends a lot of time with houses in Dunedin and through the pilot project in Milton, talking about all those sorts of things. So whilst heat pumps are cleaner burning, don't emit, they are quite expensive to run. And she works through all of those things with those people, so it helps them make the decision that suits them the best. But yeah, certainly it's a promotion of clean solid fuel burners.
Okay.
Funds are only paid over when we get an invoice for each unit.
Councillor Robertson.
The promotion of clean solid fuel burners. I'm not sure that's how I understood. I thought it was either you could have a heat pump or a solid fuel burner, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
I'll check that. I know that
it's
the discussion has been about the replacement of fires with new
yes.
cleaner burning fires.
Yes.
But yes, certainly.
I think customers have a choice. They can have gas, they can have pellets, they can whatever
they
want.
They have the money to do what they want.
Okay. Yes. But yeah. Councillor Laws.
I might have missed this. I read it and I thought, are we actually spending any money
on this proposal? Yes.
How much?
This process exists currently. So if we had an application from someone who wanted that subsidy because they were in Ayrshire 1 or Milton, we would pay it out now. So the advantage of this would mean that someone else was doing that promotional work and would have a better focus on it. So if someone came to us now and said, I want to exchange my open fire for a clean burning appliance and I'm super annuitant, we would give them $1,500 on receipt of the plumber's bill.
And we have done, been quite active.
If you're in Ayr Zone 1, yep.
If you're in Ayr Zone 1, and we've been quite active over the years. I can't remember the numbers, but there's
hundreds of them. Yeah. And we've done expos, and we've done all of the things that these people say, but it's winding down. What this would do is allow Mr. McLean's team not to have to do that work. So I think it's great.
Yeah, I'll move the recommendation. And just in doing that, note that it's a bit of a no-brainer. We've had a reserve that hasn't been fully allocated, and if somebody else is promoting that, and it's exactly as you've described, Mr. Bodica, work we've already been allocating towards, fantastic. So, move that.
And thank you as a seconder, Councillor Scott.
I actually previously moved it, but...
Oh, sorry, Councillor Scott.
Councillor Robertson will second.
Yeah. And speaking to promotion... the first point is just because we've got 500 grand sitting there doesn't mean we have to spend it. You know, in fact, you might find that if we're not getting the bangs for the bucks, that we wrap up this reserve and we put it somewhere else. That's the first point. And the second point to Councillor Lawton, the concern about electricity prices in the future, you know, part of this package is actually insulating the house. The amount of energy that's actually required to heat this house in the future is significantly reduced, even if they go down the electrical path. So I wouldn't necessarily assume that the scenario in South Otago, Milton, is as bad as a non-insulated house with the power turned on.
Yep. All right. And so this, just to expand a little, this trust has grown out of Dunedin and is looking more regionally. It's been set up, I understand, as a regional trust. There are also others. I was in Bluff recently, and there's an iwi-based organisation / trust there working in Central Otago on exactly the same thing. So there's some gaps being filled by other trusts. That's fine. So, yeah. All right, any other questions on this report? Recommendations have been moved and seconded.
Mr. Chairman, before I can vote on this, Mr. Bodica did say there was no money for insulation.
That's correct.
And that troubles me a bit because it's a bit of a waste of time putting in whatever burning unless you can also encourage and enable these people in Milton.
But there's no money for insulation from ORC.
From us.
But there is other money.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I would see that the Trust would actually fund that insulation part of it separately and use our money. Now, their desire is to get our money to do both, but as I said, the money was collected on the basis of clean burning appliances. That's
always been the case. There's been other sources of funding to assist houses with their insulation.
Yeah. ECA funding.
For example, ECA grants. Councillor Kenton.
Oh, just briefly, 75 grand out of the reserve that has been rated in the past, and that's what we've got left over. One day after we commit that, I live in Alexandra and ring up and say, any chance I can get one of these cheap burners, what's left? Anything at all, or have we...
Yeah, I mean, we've got...
Have we dropped off those programs?
I'm not sure if we're rating for it still or not, but we've got 500,000 left, so...
Yeah, there's approximately 500,000 in the reserve. We've stopped rating for it last year, that we're in.
Affect the immediate future of those programs in Central.
But we allocate 100,000 to... for the annual uptake. This year, I think, year-to-date up to March, we've had about 50,000, 55,000.
Yeah,
so it's being used a little bit, but... not the full amount.
And the Minister of Environment, you've heard me say in the past, is reviewing the National Environmental Standard on Air Quality, and that will flow on to a review of our air plan, and then we'll have to revisit this whole work program and project. This is carrying on in the meantime. Put the recommendation. All in favour, please say aye. Against? Carried. Thank you very much. All right, on to items for noting. Report back from councillors. Councillor Robertson.
So yeah, I don't want to labour on my report, but yeah, I felt fortunate to be able to attend the local government water forum at the end of May then, and Councillor Woodhead and myself went along. Yeah, I'd urge you to read that report. It's quite food for thought, I thought. I thought it was a really good forum, and really broad attendance, so TAs and regional councils and sectors, research, all types of organisations there. And what's really emerging is a change in attitude across all areas of society towards water and water quality. It's right up there as an issue for the nation, and as a shift away from just prosperity for the nation towards quality of life and social type dimensions and cultural and what we believe and wanting to invest in those things and protect those things. And yeah, if you read through that, some of the especially the primary sector's comments on water quality is pretty interesting. For what was Land Corp, Palmu Farms, I think they are now, and their CEO to be talking about a dramatic shift in the way that they're farming on the ground now and the way that they see farming shaping up into the future. Just over and over hearing about that the future's going to be vastly different to what it is now. And yeah, and there's a desire, I suppose, for those sectors to get behind that. And I suppose really quite a bit of positivity. We've shifted on from the defensiveness that was there, and all working collectively together. So I thought it was really good. Yeah, I'm not sure there were some other more technical things like perhaps the Professor David Maidment as well with the using the Lawa hydrology data to be able to extrapolate a model for water nationally in New Zealand. Pretty exciting too, predicting hydrological responses to weather events, and that's pretty cool that we've got Lawa hosted here and that that's actually something we could achieve. And yeah, how and seeing that model working was really good to have experienced, and Stephen probably will want to expand on that. I don't know if I missed anything particularly. It's there to read.
And there's work picking up, conversations occurring already with Professor Maidment. I've been involved in emails tracking around the world, and he thinks we're fit for purpose to develop a water model, a national scale water model for New Zealand. So there's some exciting stuff there. Lawa is world leading.
I just thought it was quite good food for thought in our own strategic thinking in the near future.
Good point. Councillor Laws.
Thank you, Gretchen. I really enjoyed reading this, and thank you very much for the comments and notes you took. There's a comment at the top of page 84 from Dr. Ralston from Federated Farmers, and you've concluded in there for a reason, I suspect. Does that have application to us as the Otago Regional Council going forward on policy?
I think that's for us to determine, and whether or not you believe that all farmers feel like that or not as well. But that was the thrust of what he was presenting to the forum. I'm not sure myself whether I actually think that's what some of our farmers are telling us. Yeah, so I don't know, it's up to us to interpret that with our own community, I think.
Well, it's just that, and the other thing I'd like to ask is they have taken a very defensive posture, I have to say. And I've seen some of the things from the outgoing president on that issue. But the other one was Nick Smith's one in here. Are you getting the indication that he is moving, he is going to make further changes to the freshwater policy for 2014 to 2015?
Well, for what, he'd probably be able to comment on that.
Because Luckman's views are a bit more extreme than where Nat Smith was going.
Yes, that is correct. I think we'll see if, depending on election results, some significant changes in water management in the next couple of years.
Coming out of government?
Coming out of government, yeah. Of all colours. And that's all I can really say at the moment.
So in terms of policy directions to us, mm-hmm. to implement on their behalf? Mm-hmm.
And we've seen significant shift in recent years, and but I mean there's an underlying tension currently between economic development and growth and the environment that the one party's the government's actually got in place, but just the conversations around the sale of water, the state of infrastructure. I know the Prime Minister's very concerned about with the Three Waters. Investment from TLAs in cities, stormwater, etc. So, I think there'll be more national direction sooner rather than later.
Thank you.
And they've virtually set us up as much. Councillor Deacon.
Yeah, on page 86, Mr Chairman, I wonder if Councillor Robertson could expand on the media commentator's second bullet point. Councils are looking disorientated and hurt. What does that mean?
That was their exact comment, so they didn't elaborate on that, but I suppose I could personally say what I think, but I'm not sure if that's too helpful. The shift in society has been in the last couple of years to a very outwardly voicing community about their anger, I suppose, of the state of waterways.
Yep.
And that caught a lot of councils off guard, and they weren't prepared for it. And so I think that's fair. I think we could probably all recognise that, and we do need to get better at it. And I think, somebody else anyway said that we need to have some simple, clear messages. We need to keep re-engaging with the community on what we're trying to actually achieve, not get too overly technical in our presentations to them, so that they can re-engage again and we can get together in a more united front. But yeah, it is fair that we have been looking disorientated and hurt.
And defensive.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. Thank you. Have a look at the report if you haven't read it yet, and feel free, I'm sure, to pick up the phone or have a chat with Councillor Robertson or myself at some point on those topics. Thank you. Further report back from councillors, Councillor Kempton, some transport activity?
Yes, I'm sorry, I was slightly less organised than Councillor Robertson, only slightly.
We've got
and there's a,
some paper in front of us.
Do you need one?
I need one. Thank you very much. Very quickly, by all means, read it at your leisure.
Yep.
We just had was invited to meet the Minister and the MP from Bacago a couple of weeks back. You see there that we, and this was just a catch up. The Minister was, Simon Bridger was particularly keen to catch up with Otago Southland, because Otago Southland had been probably engaging more at Ministry of Transport and ministerial level than other RTCs had, and so he was keen to come back to us. And of course, naturally, we noted the fruitful engagement that we've had in recent times. You can see there that we took the opportunity to link issues in Otago and Southland where they align with the South Island topics, and we've noted there the freight tourism and resilience thing. But we were also keen to let him know that, yep, so there's no question, we didn't bother talking about Queenstown. We were all very well acquainted with Queenstown and its issues.
But particularly down east of the east coast of Catlins in particular, I was going to say the invasiveness, that isn't quite the right word, but tourism is at the end of every gravel road. That leads to the coast every night, and it's not just the freedom camper thing, but there's, big camper vans and so on, and little cars, and so what that means is that the roads, and certainly now in the eastern part of Otago and in Western Southland, for instance, that were built for a dray and two cream cans once a day, or maybe twice a day, and
once a day for
are now handling their 200 tankers, which they're doing, but now, and every now and again a stock truck, but they've also now got to handle quite a variation in the kind of traffic, some of which wants to stay at the end of the road overnight. And what that means is that there are just some other dimensions being introduced that will require planning, and it isn't a toilet at the end of every road. It's more to do with people who have never been on that road before and what they're going to strike and how they're going to react to that. So, and there are some smart ways of working around that, but that's a pretty significant issue that's emerging and has to be overcome. He took that on board. We went on just to talk about some particular things that are happening in transport in our area, and particularly the airport and associated infrastructure. Queenstown Airport capacity, at the moment is, while terminal facilities can be continuously upgraded, there's a point at which it reaches capacity for particularly international aircraft. They've got nights at the moment, but of course that's building all the time, so what are we going to do? We're going to think about Wanaka, the Quarra Gorge, the multimodal linkages, making off-road cycling network work with the roading system. We talked about that. We talked about some single lane bridges, none of which have actually got a business case to make them two lane, but there are other really, really important reasons why you should. On the basis that many of the people who are driving down through the Lindis have actually never been on the road before and have never seen a one-lane bridge. And so you've got to think about some of those other issues rather than just the straight business case stuff. We went on to talk about State Highway 1 and the Cargill to Bluff. There's some quite interesting things going on there. The Minister said to us, it's time for you people to be aspirational, he said, and we thought we were kind of starting to think like that. And of course we were talking to the Minister about the whole idea of transport funding and making it much, much more flexible so that non-road solutions to road problems actually are fundable. And he took all that stuff on board as well. So it's quite a useful,
thank you.
A useful half hour.
Okay. Always interesting when ministers say those sorts of things in election year.
Absolutely.
Any other councillor report that? Could I just, through you, Mr. Chairman, just add to Councillor Kempton, we had a Otago Southland meeting last week in Alex, and and this will be of interest to my Dunstan constituent members also, that the ARF fund balance has been wound up, and there was a balance in the Otago of $1,427,970, which has been, we as a committee agreed to put that towards the Tucker Beach roundabout.
Yep,
there.
Under the
so
bridge.
So that's going there.
Yep.
And just as a matter of interest, Southland had a balance of that 9.8 of that fund left also, which they're putting into Alice Street roundabout, Edendale Bridge, and there's one other thing. Oh, was one other, there was three things
I'll,
there.
I'll figure that out, yep.
Yeah, so good. That's all good, so.
Good old R funds.
It's now, not there now though.
No, exactly. Any other councillor report, please? Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Councillor Woodhead. I just went to the SIG stress free irrigation afternoon, really good. In fact, I've forgotten probably a lot of things that we had learnt at the Dean Permit Day, you know, with Iwi, Doc, KTO, things like that. Fish and game, and obviously they're getting together, and I think, as I said, I really like what you said this morning earlier about, you know, assuring people that we've got the resources, because they were a little still with the Sunday afterwards and had a couple of talks, a couple of people, and said, look, well, you've got Bruce Morning in there, this is great to see, have another chat to him if you're not feeling comfortable about this, and they did go up and have a talk. So it was good to be there, and I certainly learnt a lot more again.
Good. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I went to that plastic meeting that I talked about before, and I also, along with our CE, went to the Sheffield presentation.
Good, thank you. All right, that's everybody. We'll move on to the recommendations, starting with the recommendations of Finance and Corp. Councillor Brown, you happy to move?
So moved.
Sam, second to Councillor...
On the condition, you'll take item 3 separately.
No.
Item 3, the Arthur Street, Russell Street.
Right.
I don't want to prolong this process, but it's got the opportunity to say something, and others may want to say something as well.
So I'd like to take all the recommendations together, we either have them or don't, but...
That's fine, it was as long as I can speak briefly to that.
Yeah, all right. Go for it.
Hey, look, we once again heard today from some disgruntled passenger transport users in Dunedin City, and look, I've got a degree of sympathy for them, but I probably what I need to say is that I accept the more senior councillors around this table accept their comments about the overarching principles that were put in place back in 2014 when the passenger transport plan was consulted on. So I accept we're on a mission, we're midstream, we've still got some way to go to fully implement that regime. However, I think we need to learn from this, and we need to somehow, as we fully implement the scheme, which may take, by the sound of it, still another 18 months or so before we're fully, we've got it fully operational. But I think we need to be mindful that there are consequences when we introduce a more direct, efficient regime. The convenience thing probably becomes second rate, so to speak. And I think we need to be mindful how we continue to sell the message about that overarching principle and outcome we're trying to achieve. Now, I don't know what the solution is long term, because as we get to fully implementation point, there may be changes in the future. I don't know. But, you know, recently Councillor Robertson and myself were involved with the Green Island Concord route, which was reinstated, or was going to be reinstated through an addendum to the current plan. So, yes, we are able to entertain some changes, but I'm just trying to make the point, further down the track, we need to keep an open mind how we can ensure that we have an enhanced passenger transport service that meets the needs of our communities. And I probably just need to say no more, because it needs to be generic, but there are some gaps. We need to be creative in the future to help fulfil those people's needs as well. I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to vote against it, but I just needed to say that.
Are you happy to second?
Yes, I am happy to second.
Right, thank you. I put it all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Yes. Aye.
Again, carried. Thank you. Recommendations of the Technical Committee. I'm happy to move. Is there a seconder? Councillor Robertson. I'll put it all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. The recommendations of the Regulatory Committee.
Yep.
We'll note Councillor Laws' abstention from the recommendations. Moves Councillor Scott. Seconded Councillor Neil. All in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried, thank you. Recommendations of the Policy Committee, Councillor Robertson. Seconded, Councillor Noon. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Yep.
Against. Carried, thank you. The recommendations of the Communications Committee.
We've got additional information, haven't we, Steve, on the draft communication strategy.
Yeah, separate item though from the recommendations of the Communications Committee. Yeah.
Workshop.
Yep.
Workshop.
So,
workshop.
Cool.
Moved Councillor Hope, seconded Councillor Neil. All right, that's item 13. All in favour, please say aye.
Mm-hmm. Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you.
Can I raise one thing before you wrap up this meeting?
You better be quick. And is it relevant to the...
I hope so.
That doesn't answer the question. Or give me any confidence.
All right, okay. I'll do my best here. The judgment of the Environment Court with regard to Reasons Horizons Regional Council that was published about a couple of weeks ago. I was wondering if we've had the opportunity as a council or council staff to review that.
And understand the implications.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are in the process of reviewing it as we speak.
Right.
Will the report be coming to us on
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Good. All right, I declare the meeting closed. BNZ are here. We need to keep progressing.